Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's a great day in the neighborhood. Marty Buron is here.
I've never been happier that Marty's here. I'm exhausted after yesterday.
That was fantastic,
oh,
Petey,
yeah,
by the
yeah.
way.
Not searching for any compliments around here. Just, you know, a little mentally whipped.
I don't have to tell it to you on the air. I told
you
it
did.
To you in
you,
private.
You know what? You're a good friend. You sent me a very nice message yesterday. I appreciate that.
I listened to you and Thurman start the One Bills Live yesterday. I was in the car. And I was literally laughing when Rivs came back in, and I could picture what it was looking like Rivs hanging in by the door and wanting to get in and then coming over. I didn't know what microphone he was at.
Listen,
at the time.
I had my winter jacket on.
I know you did.
I was walking out the door.
But the funny part, so I couldn't picture if he was on your microphone, PD, or on Thurman's microphone and how that all worked. And then you guys started talking about the race, the bubble race. And I could see it, but again, I had almost forgotten about it.
Yeah.
So when I got home later and I saw the tweet and I watched it, I laughed again. Like, I'm laying in bed just like, why are you looking at the tweet? And then I was laughing because, like, yeah, you were fast, Rivs, but
you did not outrun
a Hall of Famer.
I am not fast. And let me tell you something. I let everything out. I blew the jets. And it was literally looked like I was going slow, like on slow motion compared to Thurman. Like he absolutely was flying.
Oh,
it was amazing how fast he was going, and he's running on ice too, which is even better. So,
it was even better because if he didn't slide at the blue line the way that he did, which gave you the win, he probably would have put a hole in the end wall. That's how fast he was going. And what? Then he takes a slide at the blue line, and his legs are kicking. He would have gone right through the Zamboni door. Boom, right there.
Anyway, it was great to sit and chat with Thurman yesterday.
My point, PD, you did a fantastic job.
Buddy.
It was fun. It was great.
It's cool to be. You know what? Because here's the thing, right? Like we're not football players, but you get to sit and talk. Even though we know Thurman, like there's still just a wealth of information in there, and knowledge and experience, and things that we don't know, and questions to ask, and that's why it's so easy. You just sit there and ask him anything about the football games on Sunday, and he's lived it.
And not only he's a fan because him, Jim, Bruce, who else was just saying he was on a group chat, and those guys were like fans, like they were complaining, just like we would text one another, or you know, somebody from the neighborhood would be texting their college buddies and about the game. I was watching the game, the Patriots-Chiefs game, and I had my son on FaceTime while we were both watching the game because you wanted to be able to share what was going on and how crazy it was. And there's Thurman talking about, I have a group text with Andre Reed and Bruce Smith and Jim Kelly.
Speaking
and
of
like,
group
wow.
texts, we'll get to Sabres in the bye week. Instigators, Andrew Peters, Craig Gervais, it's Tuesday, Marty's here. You know what? Believe it or not, there's a lot to talk about. Read Buffalo News today, Mike Harrington's article. We'll talk about that, just about the first 25 games, the last 23, and where to go, and maybe what's on tap from now until the end of the season, and when is the right time or when is the time for this team to start winning. But speaking of group chats, Marty.
Yeah.
You sent out the text after the New England game to our group chat just about NFL overtime. And it's funny that you sent that out, and I didn't respond to it on purpose because I literally texted myself because there was a slim chance that I was going to host the first 30 minutes of One Bills Live, and I ended up being on there for three hours. So I watched the games. But the one note that I sent to myself was, NFL overtime sucks. That was, I said that to myself. And I'm just thinking, that's, I'm going to open up tomorrow with whoever I'm on tomorrow, and I'm going to have a conversation about OT. You like it.
No. Okay. I wanted to get everybody going, and then I think it's Tom. And
I called you out yesterday. I said that. I said, Marty sent out the tweet about, or the text about liking it, and I'm like, Marty!
Well, because I'm saying right now, me and Brian Duff, last few years, the Sabres in overtime, like if the Sabres lost the faceoff at center ice, they never touched the puck and it was in the back of their net. They never got possession of the puck, right? So I'm saying, I sent out a text saying, why is everybody complaining about the NFL overtime and the fact that, you know, the Chiefs never got the ball? Like, in hockey, if you lose the opening draw, you may never get the ball and the overtime may be over. And Tom goes, oh, it's much more different than that. I'm like, I know. I'm just trying to get something going here. It is. They changed it. And I remember back in the days when the CFL was, you had to win by six. And you couldn't just have a field goal and be the winner. So you had to win by six. Now, in the case of the NFL, that wouldn't have changed anything. But I just love college football's overtime rule. Just put the ball on the 25 and let's go.
That's what I thought it was, but I didn't know for sure, and I was actually going to bring that up yesterday.
I don't know if it's a 25 or
35. I thought
it was 30.
I don't know, 30 whatever. Or whatever, but each like team got a shot at offense, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you can't get a touchdown, you're the first team, you get a field goal, then the other team knows that, hey, if they can go for a touchdown and win the game. So you would have had, that in that scenario, you have, you know, Brady go and get his offense going, and then you know, like, Mahomes is on the bench right now, and he's prepping. He's got his team, he's got his coordinator, his wide receiver, and whatever, and they're getting ready. What are we going to do? How do we? And it would make it for such an exciting game.
I would like that very much. That's all I got.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, dynamite insight by you, Riv.
It's a great take.
Yeah, great take. I like that very much. Very simple. That will get you on any national panel in the NFL right there, I think. You could be right up there next to Boomer Esiason and all the greats. Instigators, Dub, instead of here with me and Marty. Instigators, Dub.
It's going to be one of those days, is it?
I don't know.
It might not be that way.
It might be. So let's talk about the Sabres. So, you know, the bye week, it's a good time to reflect on what's gone on this season. And, you know, great start to the season. First 25 games, best record in the league. Last 23 games, worst record in the league. So, you know, I mean, what is the difference between the Sabres' first 25 games and their last 23? And what is the realistic expectation of this team? And when is the right time? I'm throwing a lot at you here. When is the right time, or when should this team be looking at a realistic time to win? Is it this year? Has it passed? Is it still there? I don't know who wants to start, take the ball and run with it, flip the coin. You want to do a coin toss?
Yeah, let's do that. You may never get the ball back, Rivs. If you get the ball, you may never get it back.
Well, I think you've started and you've talked enough already.
Okay,
so let me just take this one. You know, the first 25 games, Mike Harrington, Buffalo News, kind of brought out the top 25 since November 28th. The Sabres are the worst team in the National Hockey League right now with a record of 7-12-4. Before that, in their first 25 games, they were the first place team in the league, yep. Were they not? There's been a huge change after the first 25 games, and I mean, I'm just really confused with, you know, I understand that they went on a 10-game winning streak, and I understand that they squeaked a lot of
one-goal overtime shootouts.
It's like the stars aligned for the Sabres, but they also worked for it. They also deserved it. They did everything they can. They came back in games. They never quit, never die, and they got rewarded for that. And the last 23 games have been quite different. You know, the 7-12 and 14, it's been a very, very different road for the Sabres. They're chasing uphill.
Well, that's the question. That's the question right there. Why? What is the difference between the first
25 and
the last
23? I have a few philosophies, but I'm curious to know yours before I chime in, because maybe we share some of the same.
My thing, there's two things. The secondary scoring, I've said it basically from the start of the season,
but it was bad in the first 25 anyway.
If you let me finish.
Okay, go.
I said that they needed secondary scoring.
He's edgy
today, I don't know where it's going to come from.
He didn't win a championship yesterday, Marty.
Because they have very capable players, okay, on this roster to have secondary scoring, but they're not. Mm-hmm. It needs to be addressed, or it's going to be a long year for this team, and it's starting to catch up. The other thing is their goaltending was Vezina Trophy-like. They were absolutely off the chart, both of them. Carter Hutton, I believe, has still played well at times, but not nearly the same consistency as what it was at the start of the season where he was winning games for the Sabres.
Here's two things I have with this. Now, and Mike Harrington says, you know, in this piece a few things, and I believe we've mentioned it on this show and on the pregame and postgame, where the Sabres is good as their record showed after the first 25 games? No. Are they as bad as their record showing since the streak in the last 23? No. They haven't found their happy middle. So that is, you know, they went really hot and then they went really cold, and they haven't found that comfort zone in the middle to say, hey, this is who we are. This is how we're going to be consistent. The two things that, to me, mark the biggest difference between when they were successful and how they're struggling right now, one is the power play. And in the article in the Buffalo News, you could see the numbers in everything that is shown. Goals for obviously went down between the first 25 and last 23. Goals against went up. So, but the penalty kill is the same. Your Corsi 5-on-5, so your shot attempts 5-on-5 is the same. Your face-off's the same. So the only two numbers that are different is your power play. It went from 19.8% to 13.6%. That is literally a goal every, or almost a goal every 10 power play. Okay, because that's like close to 10% difference. So every three games, you get three power play and a half a game or whatnot. That's a goal every three games. That makes a big difference in the National Hockey League. And your goalies not getting the save. Listen, Hutton went from 920 save
per game comes from.
Was that?
That could be where you lose your goals for right there.
Exactly. A half a goal a game that you don't score, that's on the power play. A half a goal a game that you give, now the difference, is on your goalies. 920 save percentage to 898 for Carter Hutton, 926 to 907 for Linus Ullmark. That's there. So now you're saying, okay, well, maybe the Sabres are getting the shots are more quality shots against, right? There's more scoring chances. So I looked on, there's a website called Natural Stat Trick. You can go on and they basically use the data from the National Hockey League and say, where are the shots coming from? Are they high danger scoring chances? Or are they just scoring chances or whatnot? The numbers are almost identical, okay? The Sabres in the last 23, they give up 9.4 high danger Corsi against. In the first 25, 9.5 they gave up. It's the same. The only difference is that in the first 25, they were taking two or three more scoring chances on the power play than in the last 23.
But
so your goalies are not making the save they need to, and your power play is not getting you that goal that it needs to. And that's
the goal. But here's the thing. You're looking at a 25-game segment to the second half is a 23-game segment, but there's 15 goals that have not been scored in that time period. There's 15 goals. That's secondary scoring. Jack Eichel's line and Skinner, Jeff Skinner right now is at an unhuman pace. Like, he is second in the league in scoring at 30 goals. I mean, he has been count on so much, and it's kind of unfair to that top line. I mean, every single night, if they don't score, they have zero chance of winning.
Yeah, but they didn't score early in the year either. So they were first in the league without having any secondary scoring. Their secondary scoring was the defense. Now, I agree that to sustain success through the season, you need the secondary scoring.
I said that after 15, 20 games of the season, even when they were winning.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There is a problem
here. Let me throw this point at you guys. And maybe it's an obvious point. I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's smart. But I guess you look at Colorado. One line, and teams have started to figure out how to play this team. Do you think teams are just playing Buffalo differently too? I mean,
no, if we look at Colorado's numbers and we don't have the specific.
They're dropping in the standings.
But they're dropping the standings, and Rantanen, Landeskog, and MacKinnon are not performing as well. But I think it's the same thing. Varlamov was so good earlier in the year. If you watched the game against Nashville last night, it was Varley's struggles a little bit. And so you're not getting that one save. I don't have Colorado's power play numbers in front of me, but I would suggest that they are still not getting secondary scoring, but that probably they're not scoring as many goals because they're not getting the job done on the power play. Because at even strength, it's very rare that a team will really have that drop off where they're not going to be generating the same throughout the season. You are who you are, and you're just going to play the same game.
Do you want to call us? 803-0550, 888-550.
I thought he was asking me. Do you want to call us?
No, I was actually going to try to do something clever on whatever you just said about, I can't even remember. But call us, 803-0550, 888-550, 2550. What do you think about this? What are your thoughts? What would you like the Sabres to do? Marty's here, Instigators, WGR 550 and MSG. He's at MartyBuron43, so tweet him. He's at CraigRevay52. I'll take the day off Twitter, boys. You can handle it. So what are we thinking here? I mean, like I a lot can be said for what's happened the first 25, what's happened the last 23. But the facts are, okay, where the Sabres stand right now, they're still in a very good spot, right? They're not in last place. They are in a playoff race right now for their lives coming back from the break. They need to have a good break and come back rejuvenated and ready to rock and roll, because you start two games on the road and you have a great first half of February, and they're all at home the first half of February every game. I think they're 2 weeks at home. But
yep.
What's the game plan here? And I'm not even talking so much from the players. I'm saying, are we in the mindset that, you know, you want to see some moves made maybe to bolster some offense, or are we standing pat to see what the team is made of for the second half of the season through the quote unquote dog days?
Well,
the grind of the season, if you want to call it that.
The dog days have lasted an extremely long time here in Buffalo. That's the toughest thing to swallow. You know, when you read that article with Mike Harrington, you know, he talks about playoff droughts. He talks about some of the players on this team that have never played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Yeah. Jeff Skinner leading the show, coming from Carolina, 627 games without a playoff game. Bogo, 595. Risto, 394. Gergensen, 389. And it goes down all the way to Jake McCabe, 253, Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, Larson. There's a large amount of these guys that have never played in a playoff game, and that's a completely different monster. And I'd like to see this team, when they were a little bit higher up in the standings, try and identify the issues that needed to be looked at. They didn't have any scoring from nine forwards other than the top three. I mean, they went in major droughts. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I really don't. Is it going out and trade? No, it's not going out and trade, because it's extremely difficult just to go out and make a trade.
Right, and I understand that from a team that I think if you had realistic expectations that this was a playoff team going into the year, or do you? And I feel like this is an ongoing conversation, and because of where the team is, where they were, but had they started, you know, near the bottom and gradually started to climb and get to where they are we still singing the same tune, or are we saying, hey, this team is much improved, let's see where they can take us? Or because they were shot out of the gate so quickly like a cannon, you know, and they're at the top of the standings in the first 25 games of the season, so what you're suggesting is that all of a sudden deviates from a long-term plan. If there is in fact a long-term plan in place, I'm not in Jason Bottrell's head, but nobody saw this coming. I think that's the part that I feel like everybody misses, is that nobody in their right mind would have ever said first 5 games, 10 games, 20 games that this team would be top of the league in the standings. So I don't know if patching a hole temporarily is the right thing to do with maybe your draft picks or young prospects that we still have hopes for to come up and play. I don't know if that's the best move.
We're not the Edmonton Oilers here, okay? And I'll paint a picture for you.
Carolina's different, Chiarelli, too. We'll go back to that in a second.
Chiarelli was given a shovel a couple of years back because the Edmonton Oilers made the playoffs, and then they weren't where they wanted to be. And he started digging a little bit of a hole, And it seems like he's dug himself a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger hole. And now he literally cannot get himself out of this hole, like, in the short term. Edmonton is stuck because it's a long term. I heard Craig Button talk on the radio this morning, and he said, this is not a quick fix. Edmonton Oilers, be in for the long haul. It's going to take a while. And you can hand Jason Botterill a shovel right now and say, hey, you wanna start digging and throw dirt around and hope to resurrect this team? But the problem is, most likely, you dig yourself a hole if you start mortgaging and you start looking for a quick fix, and
it's easy to blame the people that were you know, removed from their positions before. But, you know, like, he last year, he spent the year cleaning up Tim Murray's mess. You know, no picks, no prospects. You gave him away for Bogosian and Kane. You traded a lot for O'Reilly. You gave a first round pick for Leonard. I mean, yeah, it's easy to sit here now after David Legwand. You know, we're sitting. It's easy to poke holes now, and I get that. But you don't. Sometimes it's hard to recognize the mess that a guy inherits until you're 2 years into his role, and you're like, man, he's still cleaning up that mess. And that's what Chiarelli's doing. Chiarelli came in, I feel like, and went all guns a-blazing. I bring in Lucic, trade this guy, get rid of Eberle and bring in this guy. And Strom's now on waivers. Get rid of Maroon. There's a plan, and then there's, like, your gung-ho plan.
There is a plan.
And we're witnessing. They have the best player in the world in Edmonton, and he had to go in front of the cameras yesterday and say, you don't want to be here.
The door's over there.
Yeah,
that's the situation that Edmonton's in right now. You think those are the kind of comments that Connor McDavid wants to be talking about, his teammates wanting to leave? Because it's not his problem. It's not like he's not performing.
I don't think any of us, any fans around, want Jason Botterill just to go out and try and find Band-Aids.
You don't want him to make a deal for Chiarelli, a UFA that might help us limp into the playoffs and end the drought, when realistically that might not be the best case scenario for this team long term.
And right now in the West, like, Edmonton could make the playoffs. They could. But is that
going to... So could Buffalo.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, like, they are being dangled this carrot in front of them, and they are a mess. The Oilers are a mess right now, and I wouldn't be surprised. Ryan Rashad, who is a TSN reporter in Edmonton, said changes on the second floor is going to happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if Chiarelli doesn't last the season. Because
all I'm saying, there's players out there that could probably help the Sabres roster, not for the short term and the long term. And I look at, for an example, not being a GM or anything, stretch of imagination, but I look at the Carolina Hurricanes, and I understand that they're very much in the same situation as the Buffalo Sabres. They have the same prospect pool. They're a younger team. They're working towards being that playoff team. They identified right away, and it's been like this for a long time, right? Months, that they're trying to get secondary scoring.
Yeah.
Well, they go out and they make a pretty darn big trade for a pretty darn good player that has scored multiple 25 goal seasons in a Nino Niederreiter, which is going to help that team moving forward, I think, in secondary scoring. And he has term on his contract. There needs to be some sort of help with this team.
Who won this trade?
Which one?
The Carolina-Minnesota trade. Who won the trade?
I like Nino Niederreiter. Yeah, I've said him all along.
I agree. So I think Carolina won this trade. So for me, I'm thinking, and when a trade happens around the National Hockey League, I look at the Sabres, I say, okay, well, if the Sabres wanted Nino Niederreiter, what would they have had to give, right? So who is a player that... maybe compared to Victor Rask. And Victor Rask missed the first 25 games of the season this year, so maybe they didn't base their evaluation of him and Minnesota's evaluation of Victor Rask on this season. They looked at the past season. But who would the Sabres have had to give up to acquire a Nino Niederreiter?
They didn't have a Rask-like player in their roster that I think could, right? Would you say that's true, that they could trade one for one?
You're not giving up Thompson. You're not giving up Mittelstadt. You're not giving up Reinhart, Eichel, Sherry. You're not giving up Skinner. So you're looking at Larson, Gergensen, Pominville.
And that's not enough to get those deals
done. It's
not going to
be enough. And you're not trading Asplund and Olofsson and the picks? So you don't have that guy. So I'm like, I like Nino Niederreiter, and I like that Carolina got him. But then I'm like, it's kind of like a little handcuffed into being able to make those deals.
Timing's everything too, right? I mean, that's exactly what comes down to trades too. You have to believe that the timing's right to add a player, obviously having the assets to move. A one-for-one deal, I don't know who the Sabres could have done one-for-one for. And to be honest, I'm not sure that I'm ready to see them start dipping into their picks, you know, their first round picks for Nino Niederreiter.
Could you have traded Risto for Nino Niederreiter?
I wouldn't have done that.
Well, yeah, because I think then you're looking at it, you're saying,
I wouldn't. You know,
have done even
that.
If they're moving Risto,
it's got to be a part of a big deal, because Risto, number one, is salary, and what he does is points. Number two, his aggression. Number three, his size. His right-handed shot. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he has his moments, but still, he's got a lot of value out there. So you can't just trade him for that.
All right, we have to go to break. When we come back, To the Point, presented by Jim Steakhouse. What we didn't get to, actually, we'll talk about this when we come back. Five. Oh, Riv. Riv's in search for another centerman. We're on number 15 this year already of second line centerman. Five. Five Sabre scouts are at the Vegas Golden Knights.
They're all down there.
Why? I'm working on a tease here, Marty. They were all down there for meetings. All right, there you go. We'll come back to The Point, presented by Jim Steakhouse.
We're back with more of The Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rave.
So I'll pretend like Marty didn't ruin my tease.
That's what I do.
Yes, there was. My mother would be slapping me right now. There were five scouts at the Vegas Golden Knights game last night. But the rumor is, and it's just a rumor, but apparently it's true, but they're down there for their scouting meetings.
That was the rumor. That's what was floating around the interweb.
The interweb. So it was reported that there were five scouts there, and you think that they're there watching, you know, trying to spark up a deal for our boy Alex Tuck, and you see that they lose.
Did you see him score last night?
Career high. Tied his career total, or just went over his career total last night in 48 games.
Definitely go there, but he is a machine. He can skate like the wind. He's big. He's strong. Do you want him, Rivs?
He depresses me.
He depresses you.
Yes,
right?
He depresses me in a big way, because that is exactly what we need. He's not only is he big and skilled, he can skate like the wind. He can hit. He does everything.
Chris,
like,
Baker.
He literally is going to be, without question, one of the best power, if you want to say, a power forward, skill forwards.
All day.
And he's massive.
Forward.
He's
front net guy.
So he's amazing.
Chris Baker, who we rely on heavily for scouting reports on young players when they're traded, you know, we call and talk because he's been watching these young players for years. Yeah. And when Alex Tuck was being drafted, he came on the show. We did the draft show. He's like, the Sabres should make a move, trade back into the draft to grab Alex Tuck, because I think that was the year they drafted Jack.
I don't know.
Might have been. Yeah, might have been the year before. But either way, he was a later pick. I think he went 18th. But anyway, he was big on him. And, he's having a great year. But so the Vegas Golden Knights had five Sabre scouts there last night. Minnesota. Maybe they were there to watch your boy Charlie Coyle, River. Maybe they were just there to watch the game.
That was a Sam Reinhart draft. He was 18th overall in 2014.
So yeah, I knew they had one of those two guys at number two overall. But maybe they're looking at your boy Charlie Coyle. Maybe they're not looking at anybody. Maybe they're just taking in a game. But you have to think that they're down there talking about everything that we're talking about. Like, these aren't just like amateur scouts talking about the draft. They're pro scouts talking about players that are out there that could probably help this team.
Again, I just love looking at
Is that
at
what they play. Do, Marty? I don't know what these meetings entail, so I'm kind of throwing it out there. Do we know anything?
Here's what usually my sense of it is, that the scouts get together, and there's different regions, right? There's a scout that has, you know, the far west. There's a scout that's in the Midwest. There's a scout on the East Coast. There's European scouts. There's pro scouts, amateur scouts. So you kind of get your list together and see, okay, who are some of the players that now we need to start paying closer attention to? Who do you like? Who do you not like? How do we plan the next month before the trade deadline? How do we plan the next 5 months before the draft and seeing, make sure that we cover our bases. Because if one scout is in the Midwest and he sees a lot of Chicago, St. Louis or whatnot and doesn't like certain players, he's going to let the rest of the team know. Because if you're in L.A. and you're scouting for the Sabres in L.A. and a team that you've already mentioned, I don't really love that player, you may have a different view on it. You may want to share that view. You may not. So that's usually what
happens.
Maybe
it's Wild Bill Carlson.
Well, I would be very interested in a Charlie Coyle. If his name coming up in the trade blocks right now, for me, I mean, this is a player that's only played in one organization. Mm-hmm. He's a first-round draft pick. He's 6'3", 225 pounds. He's a centerman that can fly for a big man, and he has got upside. How old is he? Only 25 years old or?
Yeah, around there. I'm not sure. You're the one that knows the height, weight, and age of the
players. I'll look him up. Riv,
I think that players like this in particular, where they just might need a new beginning, could take off like nobody's business. He's making a very reasonable, I think, $3.3 million on his contract. This is a player that, to me, I mean, could be a second, as of right now, or a third line player for a very long time in an organization. I think Charlie Coyle is a stud.
Chuck Coyle is 26. He'll be 27 on March 2nd. So
he's 92.
Throw him out. He's too old.
No, he's not.
No, he's perfect age. He's absolutely perfect.
This is where being
I don't
GM
have a history
so
of being sarcastic now, do I?
No, not at all. But this is where being a GM is so hard because you're looking at Charlie Coyle. Why would Minnesota trade Charlie Coyle?
Because he's not going to be.
He's not reaching his full potential as the organization probably sees it. So you're looking. You're Jason Botterill. You're the Sabres. You're like, are we a team and are we an organization that can take a Charlie Coyle and get him to his full potential? We've seen that in trades where somebody gets traded and all of a sudden, boom, they take off.
You certainly have the talent to put around him.
You talk William Karlsson.
He had
a handful of goals. He gets to 40. You talk Alex Tuch. He had a couple of goals and didn't seem like he was getting through. Devin Dubnyk, a goalie, was the fourth goaltender on the Montreal Canadiens depth chart to an all-star. So it's happened. But it's also, you've seen it so many times where a guy, you say, oh, he's going to get a good change of scenery. It's gonna work. And it's the same old. So that's the really tough chair to be sitting in a GM position or a scout to recognize that he has the skills. He's just not being shown how to use them the right way. And that's tough to see.
You give me a 6'3", 225-pound center that can skate like the wind. And I'll tell you right now, he's still very young. I think he's moving into the best part of his career in the next 5 years. He's a guy that makes me look at him and say, you know what? There's a lot of upside for this player still. And I mean, sometimes a new beginning is what's needed in certain cases. And you've seen players that have had good careers, but then get traded, and that player has taken off because he's in a new beginning.
Mm-hmm. He's Craig Rivet when he went to San Jose.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, it's a new start. I look at, Patrick Sharp back in the day when Chicago Blackhawks were trying to figure out we need some scoring. So they ended up going to pick up a young Patrick Sharp. Well, he took off for the Chicago Blackhawks and scored, a ton of goals.
I never saw that one because I played against Sharp in the minors his first couple of years. He was in Philly with the Phantoms, and he was unbelievable. But no one would have ever thought that he went to have the career he had with Chicago. But and now he might have the best hair on NBCSN when he goes on there sometimes. He's got more lift than – anyway. Okay, so we got to do To the Point presented by Jim's Stakeout. So what do we do at Jim's Stakeout, Marty? Eat at Jim's.
To the point.
You got to let the intro go, and then you say, eat at Jim's.
Play the intro again.
No,
we're not going to do that. Okay. So, Riv, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Who is the NHL's best defenseman? And not points. So, I can't remember who. JT Bourne, at JT Bourne on Twitter. Working on something here and feel the need to crowdsource a question so I don't miss anyone off teams I don't get to see much. Which NHL defenseman, thank you very much, which NHL defenseman do you believe to be the best defenseman who keeps the puck out of their net best, in your opinion? The best defenseman. Like, you know, not your Erik Karlsson.
Well, my best defenseman. Or best defenseman in the league?
Probably would be best.
I'm just going to take best defenseman. I'll give you two of them. Brent Burns right now, I think, is the best defenseman in the National Hockey League.
Does he keep pucks out of the net?
Yes, he does. He's a defenseman.
Okay. Who else? Give us another one.
Hjalmarsson, for example, was a realistic choice.
Yes. So I will give you two. My best defenseman in the National Hockey League is Brent Burns. My other best defender, I think, out there is Victor Hedman. I think he's 6'5". He skates like a gazelle. He can track ice like you wouldn't believe. You can't beat him. I mean, he is just a very, very elite. Those two guys are without question, and going to be long-standing clash of the Titans for the Norris.
All right. So, Marty, I'm going to ask you the question. Who is the best NHL defenseman to keep pucks out of the net? Not for the Norris.
Can you give me the origin of the word? Can you use it in a sentence?
Defenseman.
Defenseman. Okay, I had Victor Hedman on my top two. I think he's very hard to play against. He's physical. He is good on the body, good on the puck. I like him. But I'm still going to go with Mark Giordano. To me, he is the best defenseman. And I know he's got all the points, but he is just so hard to play against right now. Although Jack made him look a little silly in overtime in Calgary the other day and walked around him. But still, I watched Giordano. He barely makes any mistakes. One-on-one, he's good. He's made some unbelievable defensive plays, breaking up two-on-ones. I give Giordano the nod there.
Okay, Shea Weber was on the list. Matthias Ekholm, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, Jared Spurgeon, Colton Parayko, Radko Gudas, Jake Muzzin, in terms of guys that are best at keeping the puck out of the net and not necessarily relied on to score. So I think we can all agree that we missed the question. And okay. God have mercy on our souls.
Do they have Ryan Suter in there?
Yes, Ryan okay. Suter's name was brought up.
He could
up.
Be out there. Like, look.
I would put Ryan Suter in there as one of the best defenders out there.
For ever, years, maybe. I played with the Rangers. I would have said Dan Girardi.
What about the other guy there that went from Nashville to the Rangers? He was amazing. Had like 8 goals a year. He had the beard and
Kevin
everything.
Kevin Klein.
Klein.
Yeah, it was
we thought
Klein,
he was
right?
up there too.
Well, no, he's not.
Guys.
He's not
playing anymore. I know,
but yeah, those guys like they were tough as nail, like a Jay McKee type defenseman that blocked a lot of shots. And as soon as they got the puck, it was off the glass and out. But I think you have to have a little bit more than that to answer the question.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So, how can Martin St. Louis help the Blue Jackets? The Blue Jackets hire Martin St. Louis as a consultant to give special attention to short-circuited power play.
How can he help?
How can Martin St. Louis help the Blue Jackets? Marty, we'll start with you.
Well, he's going to have a different perspective, but here's the problem. Power plays are being dissected by coaches, assistant coach, head coach, skill coach, and now Marty's going to come in and give his view on it. For me, it's like Wayne Gretzky coaching the Arizona Coyotes. Like, if you're the best at something, it doesn't mean you're going to be great at teaching it. So I think it's going to be a good experimentation. I think Marty's been great like at the U-talkie level, and he's a pro, but I just don't see how that's going to...
River, how can Marty St. Louis help the Blue Jackets?
Very simple. He's going to walk in the front door. That's how he's going to help. He's a winner. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the truest professional that you can find.
Yep.
He's had to fight through the adversity. Back in the day when you had this guy that's, what, 5'7", 5'8", on a good day, and he had to play against guys that were in a different era, big and strong and mean. He fought through all of it. He was one of the best players in the National Hockey League in his time. And I just think that the players in Columbus are going to be really excited to listen to a player of his stature give that information.
But when Marty played, he had Vinny, he had Stamkos, he had all those guys.
Brad Richards.
That made the power play so much easier. Now Marty can come in and give some good ideas. But in the end, I still think that, I mean, who does Columbus put on their power play?
You got to have the personnel to have success.
So I don't know
and
that
you've
got to
have guys that once you have the personnel, they've got to gel together.
Yeah. I'll tell you who's not having much success right now, and I gloat about it a little bit. The Leafs aren't as hot as I think everybody would like them to be, and Mike Babcock shifting up some lines, just had Matthews and Marner skating together to see, you know, maybe consider some other options. So should the Leafs have Matthews and Marner on the same line? Marty, we'll start with you.
Well, why not? I mean, Marner was playing with Tavares, so you just change some chemistry. They got two lines up top that can really do some magical things, but it seems like it's tails right now. And Babcock, after their last loss, basically said, I loved a lot of things that we did. Our shot attempts were great. Our scoring chances are great. There's just not that it factor to the Leafs right now that they had last year, that they had earlier in the season. And you got to try different things. And that's just
you think they need to try that, Riv? Marner and Matthews on the same line?
Listen, I mean, the Tavares-Marner combination has worked exceptionally well this year. That being said, Austin Matthews needs to wake up. He is an elite player in this game. And if it takes putting Marner on the line, yes, do it. Now you're putting John Tavares in a position where he's got to work with the players that he's going to work with. But you know what? You need to wake up Matthews. He's a hell of a hockey player in the National Hockey League. He just might need a little bit of boost right now, and Mitch Marner might be that guy.
All right, last but not least for To The Point presented by Jim Stakeout. Good move for Hurricanes to extend Teuvo Teravainen into a 5-year deal. He received a 5-year contract extension, $5.4 million cap hit, 24 years old, 64 points last season, 39 points in 48 games this season. What are your thoughts? Good move?
I like it. I think, look, he's a 55 to 65 point player. That's what you pay a guy like that. $5.5 million. He's 24, so he's young. He was acquired in a trade. Teravainen was with the Chicago Blackhawks, I believe, before coming over to Carolina. Yeah, so, you know, you've got those type of players, and they're working well in your room. Now, what is intriguing is a lot of players at 24, 25 will ask for that no trade or no movement later in their contract when they get to their free agency years, and Carolina not giving it to him. So if he does so well, then great. If not, at 5.4, he's still a tradable asset.
You like this move, Riv? Hurricanes, Teravainen, 5-year deal?
Yeah, I think it's actually a very fair contract. He's put up some really good numbers. Last year, 65 points. This year, he's got, 39 points. Yep. He's on pace for – he's a 65-point guy in this league. He's a 20-plus goal scorer, and he's had a really nice start in Carolina the last couple years. He's really blossomed into a nice player. The only thing is every time I look at a player like this, he's 24 years old, putting up these kind of numbers, the old ding, 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 the light goes on. It's Sam Reinhart. And Sam Reinhart's got 44 points right now. And Sam Reinhart last year had 50 points and 25 goals. And I mean, they're going to have to pay Sam eventually because he just continues to produce.
Instigators, that'll do it for To The Point presented by Jim Stakeout. When we come back, see what Marty has in the book over there for Dis or Dat, a very popular segment here on the show. And I look forward to that. Marty Biron coming up with Dis or Dat right here on the Instigators, hour number 2 at 11, WGR 550 and MSG.
Welcome back to the Instigators. It is time for Dis or Dat, and Petey and Rivs are just looking at the New York Islanders draft last year, and they had Noah Dobson, Waldorf or Astoria?
Oliver Wahlstrom. Oh. Yeah, Waldorf Astoria.
Oliver Wahlstrom and Bodie Wild in the second round. But let's stay on the New York Islanders. First star of the week is Robin Leonard. So I'm asking you this. Most responsible for the Islanders' turnaround this season, Leonard or Trotz? And so you get a little perspective here. Robin Leonard's top 65 of 67 shots last week for the New York Islanders was 3-0. He leads the NHL with 11 wins in the past 12 outings dating back to December 18th. This or that?
Trotz. John Tavares allowed everybody to spread their wings.
Trotz or Leonard? This or that?
It's Trotz. I think it's absolutely Trotz. Because if Leonard wasn't playing well, they'd bring in somebody else to try to right the ship. But I don't know. That's a very tough question. I don't want to throw too much credit at Leonard. But I mean, maybe
why is that?
Okay, well, ask you. No, this,
well, you know, I love the story. I love his story, and I love that he's turned around. I'm very, very happy for him. I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know. Riff. I just, you know, would have been nice.
Who is most responsible for the turnaround? Trotz or Leonard?
I'm going to say Trotz.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the leader of the ship. He is driving and setting the game plans and the mindset of every individual in that room. There's a standard. They're working on. They're tightening that inner circle in the dressing room. They're working on so many things that you know, the Islanders organization haven't had. Well, now they have one of the most storied guys for keeping things real
Coach
tight
and
organized with the GM. And yeah. I mean, Barry Trotz is one of the very best coaches in the National Hockey League. He's done a fantastic job. But that being said, I have a question for you guys. Robin Leonard right now, does he have any opportunity whatsoever? If he continues on his path, does he have an opportunity for the Vezina?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because the last three games, the Islanders gave up 17 shots, 19 shots, and 19 shots. So I think you're looking at it, you're saying, hey, this is a much easier environment for a goalie to succeed, and that's why I say it's
then
Barry
tell
Trotz.
Me why the heck did Marty Brodeur win all the Vezina? He had
because he was
friggin' 10 shots a game.
He was playing, no, he didn't have 10 shots. He had 24 shots a game, but he played 75 games a year. That's the difference. Marty played every game.
Robin Leonard right now has 26 games played, so half a season.
So he'll play. He'll play 50.
He might play 50, yes. So
you can't win the Vezina playing 50.
Absolutely
games.
Can. Absolutely, no. You can.
Oh, but they right can win now, the Jennings, right?
Right now,
they can, as a group, him and Thomas Greiss can win the Jennings if they keep going that way. Absolutely.
Because Jennings, the backup, has to play 20 games, right?
20 games.
Yeah.
But still, if your backup doesn't, you, as the number one goalie, would get it because it's a team award that's given to the to the goalies. But anyway, okay. let's move on to the next one, and I'm going to click.
Well, who
it
would
here.
Be your guy then for the Vezina? Someone in mind?
I'll ask you this question. I'll jump a couple of questions. So since January 1st, okay, two goaltenders lead the league in shutouts since the 1st. One, you kind of have to expect him, is Andrei Vasilevskiy with the Tampa Bay Lightning. The other guy is Carey Price. So I'm asking you right now, today, who's the best goalie in the National Hockey League? Carey Price or Andrei Vasilevskiy?
It's easy.
Price.
Price.
He is back in top form. And that is what is scary for the Sabres, is the fact that the Montreal Canadiens, early in the season, were scoring a lot of goals and were winning games, like with Price being just average. Then Price took a little time off, had a baby, had a little irritation or inflammation, and now is on top of his game, and that's very scary. So I guess that was an easy this or that. You guys both agreed on that one. So that, maybe to answer your question, I think Vasilevskiy and Price for me are elevated above Robin just because they're, I don't want to say more valuable to their team right
how,
now.
How can Vasilevskiy win the Vezina? He's played 28 games. Robin Leonard's played 27. So how is Vasilevskiy?
Vasilevsky's missed game because he was injured.
So what?
He
didn't play the games.
He'll still get to 60. He'll get to 58, 59 this year. Vasilevskiy will. Unless they are running away with the Eastern Conference and they need to rest him. But, hey, quick question for you. This or that. So Mikko Koivu scored his 200th NHL goal and joining brother Saku, who scored 255 in the league. So they are the 14th set of brothers to each score at least 200 goals. So who's better, Mikko or Saku Koivu?
Mikko.
Saku.
No.
Why Mikko? Like, I'm asking
better
why Mikko?
Better two-way player. I think he's had a longer career. He's bigger. He's stronger. Never got the recognition.
How many games has he played?
900 and something.
Saku played 11-plus.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
I think they're very similar. The difference between the two of them is Mikko Koivu is 6'3", 220 pounds.
Yeah.
Saku was 5'10", 5'9", 180 pounds.
Yeah.
Saku was a dog with rabies. I mean, he played the game at the highest level. His compete level was nothing like I've ever seen. True professional in all senses of the word, and I would definitely say Saku Koivu.
Saku played 11-24, had 839 points. His brother has played 969. I knew he was right around like
close
900 to 1,000. He has 687 points. So
it's identical.
It's almost identical, and he's who's played on the better team?
Saku Minnesota. Played, by far, Minnesota.
They missed the playoffs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, 6 years when he was there. They could miss this year 7. Now, what did this?
Here's
is
the
a
thing:
great conversation.
They are so different players. Saku was much smaller, but Saku was a pain to play against. Hated, hated playing against Saku Koivu, and he had that. And I'll tell you this: with Saku, with his cancer treatment, or whatever. I'm picking Saku just because I got to play against him and. Hated him, but anyway, we got
to
take a break.
If you were
so you
to
guys
see,
can debate that
if you were to see
Saku
Koivu and what I saw when he went through that cancer treatment and how he looked, and when Brian Savage and I would go and see him in his bed, and to see what that guy did after he, you know, got by the cancer treatments and started to build up his body and playing in that first game when he still didn't have hair, he was still bald. Yeah. From all the treatments, to see what that man did in the playoffs and everything, like I mean, they're not even on the same stratosphere.
Can I ask what year that was?
No, we got to go to break.
Was that 2000, 2001?
He only played a couple games. Yeah.
So it was 2001, 2002 when he only played three. He only played three games.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, it's PD's update. We have
12 games. He had 10 points.
You know what, PD? You hate when we do this, and I hate when you do this. I'm being yelled in my ear. Go to break.
How hard it is. Your job when you guys are rifling away in the background.
Okay.
So,
taking break.
Lesson learned.
PD's got a lesson to learn here over the break here. His update is up, and we have much more coming up on The Instigator, WGR 550 MSG.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.